SB 144 here momentarily. I'm also going to announce that SB 540 has been postponed, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 569. Staff can introduce the bill.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 569 was heard previously. It allows physicians to supervise up to four physician assistants, or PAs, and eliminates a language that allows physicians to supervise up to four PAs in certain locales. As some brief background, a physician assistant is qualified by education, training, experience to provide medical services under direction and supervision of a licensed physician in active practice. PAs in Oregon have to graduate from a PA training program that is accredited, and their license is monitored by the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. Under current law, a physician may supervise no more than two PAs. However, current law does allow physicians who practice certain designated health professional shortage or medical underserved areas to obtain approval from the Board of Medical Examiners to supervise up to four physician assistants in those areas. We do have dash one amendments with this bill as well.
Thank you, Rick. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jennifer Weber, and I'm here representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. And with me is Mr. Kurt Hawkins, PA here in Salem, and the president of OSPA. And you heard from him when we testified previously on this bill. And also with me is Francine Belosa, who's our legislative chair for OSPA. And I just wanted to briefly walk through the Dash 1 amendments with you. We work with the Oregon Medical Association on these amendments, and also took them to the Board of Medical Examiners, the regulatory body for PAs, and I believe the BME is here to testify today as well. So what we've done to the original Senate Bill 569, which increases the number of PAs that a physician may supervise in regular areas from two to four, is we've added back language that allows in areas of need and with the approval of the BME to supervise actually more than four PAs. To our knowledge, no physician in Oregon actually supervises more than four PAs. There's only one physician who supervises four PAs, and they're all actually part-time PAs. But there was a concern of the OMA that in case a physician needed more, there was an area of need, and if the BME assured that the supervision was adequate, that they still wanted this approval to be in there for underserved areas. And we appreciated that and think that it's a great idea to leave it in there too. The other concern that the OMA has that we address in these amendments is adding a four-year sunset to the bill. And this is just to, I think, ensure that we have the regulation necessary and everything is going smoothly in the implementation of the bills. And, and hopefully we'll be back next session or the session after together with the OMA to discuss the sunsets with you again. So if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Kerr.
Quite frankly, Jennifer, I did not want underserved areas to be out, so I'm glad that piece stayed in.
Yeah.
As you know, since 1985, when I first came, I've always been concerned about medical services to rural communities. So I'm drawn to that piece, and I'm glad to see that piece is still there.
Great, Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, thank you. It's an important issue.
And with that, Mr. Chairman, I relinquish concerns that I had at first.
Yeah, I'm trying to find where you...
The amendments restoring the language on the Dash 1 amendments, it's what's indicated in lines 1 and 2. And then in your hand-engrossed copy of Senate Bill 569, on page 1, lines 24 through 29, that's the language that we are restoring. We're in certain areas.
I don't see anything in the proposed amendment, Dash 1, that says anything about a sunset.
Let's see. On the Dash 1 amendments, it's page 2, lines 23 and 24.
It says they become operative. They don't apply until January?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. One, the way that legislative council structures their censets now is they make the amendments to the bill, and then in the text of the amendment, which is basically Section 2 of the entire Dash 1 amendments to 569, that's the language as it currently is in statute. And so then when the censet refers to Section 2 and it says Section 2 becomes operative January 2nd, 2006, it's saying that it's restoring the language as it is today. They kind of, they put it all in there.
It's like after 2006, it goes back to it was before this legislative session.
But it says become operative.
Yeah.
It should be inoperative, isn't it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's...
I guess I'm thinking of Burl Ives' song. I've just got a funny way of laughing.
I know.
I've got a pretty funny way
it's
of...
It's true. When we saw the amendments at first, we were a little confused as well. But it's the same way in the amendments that we'll see coming up in Senate Bill 570, is they kind of put the changes side by side. The first change is putting the bill and amending it the way that to where we're changing the law. The second section, Section 2, actually, of the Dash 1 amendments, places the law the way it actually is today, where we're changing it from. And so then Section 3, it says Section 2 becomes operative in 2006. It's restoring the language. I think it's the way that legislative council drafts them, and we have to be confused initially and trust that they're doing it the right way, which I think they are.
I guess I'll accept your, although I may not like it.
I'm always concerned when they say something about operative and the juxtaposition to doctors.
Oh, no.
He's so corny.
Right.
We'll throw it back up.
So I'm a cut-up. What are you?
That was a good one.
Too many sermons yesterday.
Yes, we.
Right.
Yeah, we got a good one this morning too, didn't we?
I know.
Told Senator Miller he missed his calling.
And I think, as I said, I think the Board of Medical Examiners is here to testify as well. So.
All right, we'll ask Kathleen Haley from the Board of Medical Examiners.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. As they're coming to Francine Beluso, who has been just an outstanding physician assistant and worked in neonatal care at Kaiser, I welcome her to our committee today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. With me at the table is Mr. Anderson from the Oregon Medical Association. The board and its legislative advisory committee and staff have all reviewed Senate Bills 569, 570, and the LC1 amendments to the bills. As part of its process of licensing physician assistants, the board examines and approves practice descriptions that are specific to each physician assistant and supervising physician relationship. These practice descriptions include specific descriptions of the physician assistant's duties and limitations, consultation schedules, including on-site supervision, chart review. Supervising physicians are responsible for reviewing the physician assistant patient charts on a regular basis. With regard to the licensing, the board does a very thorough review of each practice description. It's first done by the physician assistant advisory committee, and then it's reviewed by the full board at its quarterly meetings. Board members did have some initial concerns about allowing this larger ratio to take place, and they were concerned because physicians need to have the adequate amount of time to do those chart reviews. But we believe that the compromise worked out between the Medical Association and the Society of Physician Assistants will give us the opportunity to protect the public and also, with the sunset provision, allow us to make sure that it's working appropriately. Board members were also concerned about some of the distant locations between the physician assistant and the supervising physician, and we hope that with the electronic communication, what it is today, that physicians will be able to be contacted immediately should the physician assistant need to. So we will be writing administrative rules should the bill go forward as statute, and we will more specifically define the definition of supervision. And as with all such matters, the board's primary concern is public protection. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Messerschmidt.
I notice in your written testimony you're talking about amendments.
Well, we were looking at the language in the existing statute about annual approval of that supervising physician, the practice description, and that is really not done anymore. It's not necessary because once that description is approved by the board, it's for the lifetime of that relationship with the physician. So we don't want to do that here because we don't want to slow this bill down, either of these bills, but it's something that we can look at with the all the parties once it moves forward.
And Mr. Chair, my concern was that I'd rather fix it here rather than put burden on the committee if we can. I understand the time frames, but it also takes time to have a conference committee.
Can we ask a question?
Certainly, Senator Carter.
Kathleen, can you do this through administrative rule or through an understanding between our parties, or how do you plan to correct the action that the senator is speaking to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, this was a part of the original statute, and it's not anything that's come about from this. It's something that we noticed in reviewing the language again, and so we were going to try to take the opportunity to correct it.
Okay.
The staff suggests that we could probably turn it around pretty quick if
okay.
we wanted to do another work session on it. I guess I'd myself leave that up to you more or less, or the folks involved.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm not going to hang the bill up, but in our natural resource committee, as you know, we had a turnaround within the meeting and took it up at the end of the meeting and got it passed us. If they can rewrite it and just pull that section out mm-hmm. and get it back to us, I don't know how the staff, the legislative council feels or how okay. available they are.
Well, it's early in the session here. I guess we'd wouldn't have any trouble squeezing it in because it's pretty well, I think, coming to agreement. See a lot of. Go ahead, Jim. You have
Mr. Your... Chair, just to verbally put it on the record, Jim Anderson, Oregon Medical Association, we do agree with the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 569 you had before you, and also are in agreement with what the Board of Medical Examiners would like to do to clean up existing statutes. They have the opportunity, and I would thank the committee for allowing them to do that, if you believe you have the time.
Well, I think we can spare the time, isn't it? See, it's a problem. Jody?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jody Fisher with the Board of Medical Examiners. I think the change that needs to be made is on the amendments to Senate Bill 569 on page 1, 15, and 16. Approval shall be valid for no more than 1 year but may be renewed annually. Just needs to be deleted. Mm-hmm. And I think it is up to you. We can either do it here or we could put in an amendment on the House side and come back for concurrence. Depending upon what your schedule, we're fine either way.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Carter.
Just wanted to ask, would that be appropriate if we ask for the language to be deleted? I just see these people who have taken off from work to be here, and I just try to like to get things done. So can we delete that in committee?
No. We'd have to get LC to do it, but as long as we've got agreement, I don't see why we'd have to drag everybody back just to delete that section.
Okay.
We might ask the previous testifiers to come up and also indicate their position. But I doubt that they're going to argue with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, again, Jennifer Weber with the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. I think it's our position. We're, very happy to have all parties agreeing on this bill. And so While we're disappointed that we would have to come back for another work session, I think that we have no objection to cleaning up the language in the statute like the board requests. And so we'd, you know, just be happy to come back for a future work session and move these out.
Senator Fields,
just a
question for
me. Just a comment. People that have real jobs don't have to come back. Just you do.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields. I won't take issue at the moment with your characterization of real jobs.
I'm going to direct staff to you then. You want to just do a dash two and clean everything up with dash two, or do you want to just do a dash two with just this particular section in it and dot both? Okay, let's take care of that and get this back on the schedule just as soon as possible. Close the work session on Senate Bill 569 and open a work session on Senate Bill. We have a public hearing on the other one. I closed the work session. I'm going to go back and amend that and close a public work session on Senate Bill 569 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 570. Staff?
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 570 modifies conditions in places where a physician assistant or PA may provide services, modifies the mode under which a physician may supervise a physician assistant. In the previous bill, we went over some background. The difference here is the current statute allows PAs to provide medical care to ambulatory patients in medical settings where a supervising physician does not regularly practice and under certain conditions. These can include a designated healthcare professional shortage or medically underserved area where a physician is provided in person by telephone, radio, telephone, television, or similar medium. We also have dash one amendments and a hand engrossed version with 570 as well.
Okay, we have Kurt Hawkinson and
Francine Belusso.
Francine and Jennifer again.
Okay. Right ahead, and also Kathleen Haley.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Quickly again, Jennifer Weber with OSPA. As the committee staff person said, Senate Bill 570 is about supervision of physician assistants. You've heard from us in the first hearing on this bill. What our amendments do is really address some concerns, again, that were brought to us by the Oregon Medical Association. What we've done is add some language back to the bill to address those concerns. We've added in language on the original bill, lines 19 and 20, and in your amendments, it is on page 1, beginning at line 23. We're clarifying that a physician assistant may provide medical services to patients in a setting where a supervising physician does not regularly practice. The bill originally took out those words, where a supervising physician does not regularly practice. We're adding them back into to again reiterate that PAs are not independent practitioners. They practice together with the physician, and this language really reiterates that, clarifies it, leaves it in the statute. We've also addressed the concern. The original bill discussed electronic media. There was a concern that email could be considered electronic communication, and yet it is not in real time. So we went back to the language the way it is in the statute today, which would ensure that a physician would be available to a PA in real time should the need arise when they're seeing a patient. And that was fine with us to address that concern and clarify. And again, this bill has a 4-year sunset on it, so we plan to work together with the BME and the OMA to make sure that the rules implement this this legislation in a way that it works effectively and there's no diminishment of patient care. We'd be happy to take any questions.
How many physician assistants are there now?
There's roughly 350 in the state of Oregon. Right.
Hey, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Haley? Jim Anderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathleen Haley. I'm the director of the Board of Medical Examiners. And as mentioned earlier, the board does support the current LC1 amendment and the full bill as it's been agreed upon. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Anderson, Oregon Medical Association, also speaking for those of us who don't have real jobs and just hang out here at the Capitol.
yes, I understand. Pass that on to some of the others back here.
I will. We would like to thank the physician assistants for helping us through both of these bills, 569 and 570, getting to the language where we can both agree, and the OMA does definitely agree with the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 570.
Thank you very much. I think I should use a priority bill to say that when there's only a line left on the one page, that we shrink the copy enough to get it on the last
page.
It's a save a tree bill.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course,
we do recycle.
If we did that bill, we'd probably kill a bunch of trees doing the bill.
That's right. And it's amendment.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing and go in. A work session on Senate Bill 170 or 570.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 570.
Senator Carter has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 570. Objections? Further discussion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Move Senate Bill 570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended, huh?
As amended, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter moves Senate Bill 570 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Murphy.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Fisher.
Aye. I would note that this is a rare occasion. We have all five members here.
I know.
Yes.
I'll leave if you want.
Yeah. They take you up on that in a few minutes. do we have a carrier? Senator Carter will carry Senate Bill 570 and is passed as amended. Close the work session on Senate Bill 570 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 144. Have staff introduce the bill.
Senate Bill 144 requires the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Services Division to develop a plan for providing children and adults with mental health treatment and services in the least restrictive setting. Requires the division to present the plan to an interim legislative committee in 2002. As some background, the 1999 Supreme Court Olmstead versus LD's decision held that Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, requires states under certain conditions to provide community-based services to people with disabilities who would otherwise be in institutional settings. The conditions being that the state treatment professionals have to reasonably determine the placement is appropriate, affected persons have to not oppose treatment, and placement can be reasonably accommodated, taking into account state resources and the needs of others receiving state-funded services. The Supreme Court noted that a state can establish compliance with this provision of the ADA if it demonstrates it has a comprehensive, effective working plan in place and a waiting list that moves at a reasonable pace. During the 99-2000 joint interim judiciary committee, a civil commitment developed a set of proposals, including one that would invoke a comprehensive planning. And then recently, a lawsuit was filed against the state of Oregon, citing that the state was not complying with Title II of the ADA, as held in the Olmstead decision.
We We have Madeline Olson and Bob Jundiff here to testify.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Madeline Olson, Assistant Administrator for the Office of Mental Health Services at the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. I'm here this afternoon to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 144. The division appreciates and supports the intent of this bill, but there are several significant problems with it from our perspective. First, the bill is primarily focused on issues of restrictiveness of services and planning transitions to less restrictive settings. The division has established a strong record of moving persons from state hospital settings to community care with legislative support and direction over the past decade. Senate Bill 144 ignores the comprehensive review of local and state mental health services recommended by the Governor's Mental Health Alignment Workgroup report. In addition, there is inadequate provision in Senate Bill 144 for local participation in planning and the development of the long-term plan. County mental health programs, which have been and will continue to be essential to the successful implementation of less restrictive mental health services, are mentioned only briefly in the list of affected parties with which the division is to work in developing a plan. Finally, the division is concerned about the potential for unfunded obligations incurred by the Senate Bill 144 planning process. The comprehensive long-term plan proposed in Senate Bill 144 would require additional administrative resources at the state level in order to prepare and present the plan to the Legislative Assembly by February 1, 2002, as the bill requires. However, once the plan is developed, the division is concerned that additional resources could be required beyond those included in the governor's 2001-3 recommended budget. It is also likely that the plan would create the expectation of future expanded program obligations for the 2003 and subsequent legislative assemblies to continue funding the recommended plan. We are also concerned that Senate Bill 144 may affect pending litigation against the state. On December 19, 2000, the Oregon Advocacy Center, proponents of Senate Bill 144, filed a class action lawsuit against the Oregon Department of Human Services in federal court. The case known as Miranda B. versus Kitzhaber is cited in detail in the written material. It was brought on behalf of all persons civilly committed to state hospitals for mental illness. The suit is brought under the American with Disabilities Act. Plaintiffs claim they are entitled to placement in less restrictive community-based facilities instead of a state hospital, that Oregon is required to fund new and expanded community-based services for their class, and that Oregon is required to adopt a comprehensive, effectively working plan for placing class members in the community. We have consulted with the Department of Justice, and we dispute these claims in the lawsuit. To the extent the proponents of Senate Bill 144 claim that this bill is required by federal law or court decision, they are wrong as a matter of law and fact. We will defend this suit in the appropriate forum. However, unrelated to the lawsuit, the department is currently engaged in the process of developing a more comprehensive plan for providing community services to the mentally ill as appropriate, and that process was underway when the Miranda B. suit was filed. However, the division would be interested in working further with the proponents of Senate Bill 144 to determine whether certain features of this bill could be integrated into the Governor's Mental Health Alignment Workgroup's recommended planning process, which is much more comprehensive and system-wide, and was introduced as House Bill 3024. This would allow the opportunity for a more integrated and locally driven plan to emerge, which takes into account both state and local resources and capacities to assure that children and adults are safely served in the least restrictive environments. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I would be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jundiff, and I am the director of the Oregon Advocacy Center. Ms. Olson is correct that our office is representing a class of individuals
against the state on this very topic. Today I am not coming to speak to you from the Oregon Advocacy Center, but I am coming to speak to you as a representative of the Interim Judiciary Committee Task Working Group, I should say, that looked at civil commitment laws. It's probably unfortunate that I was selected as the representative to make these comments, given our office's involvement in this litigation. However, I would like to make it clear that this is not a bill that that we have sponsored or we are the sole proponent. In fact, it was a bill that came out of that work group. That work group was made up of a variety of interests in the mental health system, and out of that work group came 9 bills. Only 2 of those bills were consensus bills, that is, everyone on the committee supported them, wanted them brought forward as bills, and this is one of those 2. The bill before you is limited to the question of planning for least restrictive services. It does not imply that there are not other aspects of mental health services that should not be planned for. It does not imply that the state is either in compliance or out of compliance with federal law. It was the consensus opinion of the work group that in viewing civil commitment statutes, and those are statutes that allow the state to forcibly put a person in the hospital and give them treatment. It was the consensus view of that group that alternatives to civil commitment need to be explored, and that the state should not overly rely upon expensive inpatient treatment when it can more efficiently and more cost-effectively move people out of inpatient treatment and into community settings. That was the feeling of the committee, and it was felt that this bill would promote those concerns. In terms of Ms. Olson's comments, a wider planning process is very welcome, and if that can be passed, we don't see how that would conflict with 144. Certainly 144 does not restrict who can be involved in the planning, and in fact doesn't even restrict what other types of planning can be conducted along with planning that is targeted to the question of providing services in less restrictive settings. Thank you.
I understand there's a couple of potential amendments incorporating one of the House bills. What was that number again?
3024.
House Bill 3024 into this particular bill, and also some amendments coming out on it. So we won't go into a work session today. We're not able to get the first set of amendments out by today, so we don't have them to look at. And we've at least got it on the record, have held our hearing, and can get back to it again. So thank you very much for coming. And, we'll be doing some work on this, and I'm guessing that both of you will want to be involved in the amendments.
Yes.
Okay. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 144.
No.
And
that's right.
We'll open a public hearing on SJR 35. Staff will introduce.
Thank you, Senator.
Resolution.
SJR 35 was heard on the 14th of March. It creates a leadership commission on health care costs to study health care drivers or increasing costs in Oregon. Allows the commission to contract with a private entity to develop this index. Requires a report to the 72nd Legislative Assembly, and then sets parameters for the operation, funding, and actions of the committee. As some brief background, a cost index is the ratio of or the number derived from various factors associated with health care costs, in essence what impacts increasing or decreasing, but primarily increasing health care costs. A study by William M. Mercer Incorporated found that health care costs rose 8.1% Public funded care services such as those under the Oregon Health Plan are also affected by escalating cost, health care costs. And we do have dash one amendments with this bill and in gross copy. Primarily, the amendments increase or expand in a more bipartisan role who can appoint members to this committee. They are attached.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Carter, we don't have anyone that wishes to apparently testify on this.
I was one of the people that that felt that these amendments were necessary, so I do concur with these amendments.
Would you say again?
I concur with these amendments. I think I was the only person who raised the flag.
Well, if you're lowering it, we're all set then.
We're all set. I'm lowering the flag.
Is there anyone that does wish to testify here today on this? There's no one, apparently.
Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Mesley. I'm a little bit confused, but I think this was a bill where we asked for some cost comparisons of to what past costs have been, or at least I think I asked that question here. And I'm wondering, is there information? I believe the answer I got was that we have those figures and we'll get them back to you. I haven't seen anything, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't understand why it's so difficult to get these figures on what our cost increases have been over the years.
Yes, I don't know either who was responsible to do that. Do you remember?
Someone was here who said that they would get the Senator the information. That's right.
Yeah. I'm not sure either.
I will review the minutes, notes, and make a contact with the appropriate person regarding that.
I know we've got a list from Mr. Crawford of the number of people involved on the bills involved, but I don't recall anything on this.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
This is just an example when agencies come before us and if they make a commitment to give information before the bills are scheduled again, because I remember someone definitely promising to bring the Senator this information, and maybe we should have some kind of deadline date when staff get the information back to committee members, because I remember that.
Okay. I guess staff is going to look that up, go over the minutes, and check that out. Close a public hearing on SJR 35 and open up a work session on SJR 35.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Clark.
Since Senator Mesrilli wanted the information on this bill, would you find it unusual to give him time to give the information, or what is your direction for that?
I guess we'll put that right on through to Senator Mesrilli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure it's pertinent for this bill passing through, but I think it is good background information that would maybe help as we debate it on the floor to have that background.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Carter.
With that in mind, I'm prepared to give you a motion.
All right.
Accept the dash one amendments to SJR 35.
All right. Senator Carter has moved amendment dash one amendments to SJR 35. Is there further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Just a little preamble to my passing on the bill to you. That maybe between now and the time this bill goes to the floor, if we find out what person from what agency had promised the information, that would be forthcoming. Which I think is important. But I'd like to propose that we send SJR 35 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. As adopted, that's right.
As amended.
As
amended and adopted.
This wordsmithing gets more difficult, David.
It's the truth.
You want to have me acting like Senator Shiel and put amended and adopted.
Senator Carter moves that we adopt SJR 35 as amended and send it to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Right.
Senator Shields.
She had a little preamble there, and I just wanted to follow up. Are we going to make sure that we have this information to the floor before the bill comes to the floor? I mean, to whoever the carrier is or whatever? How are we going to do that?
Well, I think that Senator Shields wanted to carry it. We can make sure that we would
want to carry the bill.
We would carry it over there to go to that information.
I think that Senator Messerly ought to carry the bill because he's the one that asked the question.
And then we'll remember to ask him on the floor, right?
Yeah, that's it. I'll ask the questions on the floor.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Carter remembered too.
This is a bill everybody wants.
Yeah, you can tell.
Sounds like I should have co-carriers. I don't see any reason why we can't have it. We could request it be postponed on the floor if we don't get it in time through its normal scheduling, because I don't know exactly how many days that would be. And
2 hours. Well,
we're not going to be holding a meeting Thursday, so we've got a little time.
Yes.
So if Rick finds the answers and gets them to the carrier, that's all that we should worry about. Okay.
Okay, further discussion? Any objections?
Yes.
Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Messerly?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Shields.
Senator Messerly and I were just saying to one another, and I think we ought to do this, and that is to hold people accountable when they say they're going to get us some information. So maybe when Rick's talking to these people, we can just kind of remind them, hey, you said you'd have this information, you didn't have it.
I'll ask my question after you tap the gavel.
So your question was if I was going to make you the carrier?
No, Senator Messerly's the carrier. That way we'll know we'll get the info.
I'll carry the bill. I'm going
to. What a guy.
SJR 35 passes. Senator George, you can ask your question, make your comment.
Okay. The other day, relative to the question about getting information, I asked for a list of folks to notify as far as pharmaceutical people, and I have not received that yet. And just for everyone's information, I had a chance Saturday to meet with a group of chiropractors, and this is not ODOC or any of the separate groups, but was just a general group meeting of chiropractors. The question was asked just before I spoke, how many favored the fee increase? And there was one hand kind of tentatively went up. When asked how many opposed, every hand went up. In fact, I think my guy that voted yes was also voting no. So I think we need to pay really close attention to what we hear as we look at some of the boards and committees.
Well taken. Hearing no other pertinent comments and having no other pertinent work to do today, I'm going to turn to the Committee on Health and Human Services.